Hello and welcome back to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity and mental health. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have Paula Maidens. How are you, Paula?
I'm awesome. So excited to be here.
The episode today is about why ADHD people are attracted to entrepreneurship and having their own business, which many of us seem to do. I've brought in Paula Maidens because Paula and I have worked together since 2019, and she also helps entrepreneurs build high-performing teams so they can scale with ease, get their time back, and create the balanced life they deserve, which we know is very difficult for ADHD people. Paula has been a business consultant for 14 years and uses her signature six-pillar framework to shift the perception that hiring, leadership, and stepping up as an empowered CEO needs to feel hard. As an entrepreneur herself, Paula shares her own business and life lessons, as well as the hands-on experience she has from interviewing and hiring thousands of people for her clients. Paula is also a proud mum of two beautiful boys. She's a wife and a passionate yogi and avid traveller. Welcome to you, Paula.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So Paula has kind of become a friend because we've worked together for so long on three different businesses. And getting clear on what we want is something ADHD and neurodiverse people don't necessarily do often. Everyone presents differently, of course, but overwhelm and a lack of ability to prioritize means that we are left with lots to do, lots to say, but we skip the part around clarity. And I think that's, for me, what we've worked on a lot, Paula, is the lack of clarity and prioritizing and getting clear. Also planning, I think getting clear on what the plan is really tough. What do you think that you do really well? Because I know you work with a lot with ADHD people.
Mm. I work a lot with entrepreneurs in general, and some have ADHD, some don't. Some are realizing that they have ADHD now. So it's certainly, you know, obviously a topic of conversation. But I think that the biggest thing I see is how fast-paced an ADHD entrepreneur is moving, and coupled with often a desire to go even faster or as fast as possible, and then coupled with a high capability, high performing person, someone who can do a lot of the things, you know, that speed and that lack of desire sometimes to be clear, because it might slow us down to drop into the details because I'm so focused on the forward direction, can cause a lot of challenges in feeling like you have the right people working for you and for people to be able to support you. And if we don't sort of realize that clarity, being clear on what we want somebody to do, and pausing or slowing down slightly for a moment to share that information with them, if we don't have that awareness of how much that's going to help us, then we're just racing through and often chasing our tails when the person doesn't do what we want them to do, or they leave, or we're back to square one.
And I suppose that goes back to the experience of staff feeling hard.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people feel is the hardest part of having a business.
Absolutely. And I think my mission is to change that thought process, because that's exactly what exists. You hire people, having a team, people will always give you a headache, people headaches. You know, everybody thinks it's part and parcel. And sure, we probably can't eliminate it completely, but you can certainly reduce it, starting with clarity, with working out, well, what is a priority, and then setting some structures in place that helps you as the entrepreneur and helps your team to work in a way that doesn't disrupt you and ultimately gets them doing what you need them to do.
Yeah. And I think you said to me once that you thought that sometimes ADHD people have the experience of just wanting it done, and that's where the rushing comes from.
That's really common. And I think that some people don't care about the detail. Some people just want it done. And then some people care deeply about the detail, but don't realize that until you're on the other side of the person doing the thing for you. And then you're faced with something that feels like it's a half-assed job, or you're really disappointed, or, you know, you have all these thoughts about why it's not what you expected. But sometimes, because your brain won't necessarily drop to that detail easily. And I guess, again, it's a huge generalization, because some people, on the other hand, are really specific on the detail and they're really fixated on the detail. But a lot of people are really fast paced and jumping forward, and they work out later, oh, I actually did want it done a certain way, or that's not the way I wanted it. And that's where that anger, frustration, resentment can really kick in.
Yeah. And I think that there's kind of like a baseline of irritability that can sometimes happen with ADHD where, you know, you're hyperactive or you're impatient and you probably don't slow down enough to give people the proper training, et cetera, et cetera. So what have you noticed about working with people with ADHD in the workforce?
So the first thing is definitely the fast-paced nature of the way that you work. And what that can lead to is impatience. It can lead to that constant comparison of maybe I should do this myself. If you're not going to do it quick enough, maybe I should do it myself. Because, and the second thing I really notice is the incredible capability and high performers that is often sitting there. So it's really hard to delegate when you think, well, I know I could do this really quickly. I know I can do it really, really well because I can learn things really quickly and I can, you know, get on top of things really fast. So if you're not going as fast as I am, and I don't believe you're going to do it as well as me, then often it's a holding on to things as well. Yeah. And the other sort of really big thing I see is lots of ideas, which, to be fair, they're often incredible ideas, which is the reason many of you are entrepreneurs, because you've got these ideas, you can see things differently. So often the ideas are incredible, but where I see it becoming a challenge sometime is when you're jumping from idea to idea, it can be disruptive. If you're not clear on actually prioritizing that idea, are we dealing with this idea now or we're parking this idea for later? Because the ideas list is often long, or an attachment to the new idea with an absolute like dismissive thought process or nature about the previous idea, and therefore dismissing the amount of work and effort someone on your team has potentially put into yesterday's idea or last week's idea. So the lots of ideas, whilst, you know, it's such an amazing attribute, if it's not prioritized and if it's not sort of handled in a way that isn't dismissive and isn't disruptive, it can really have quite a negative ripple effect.
Yeah. And then there's that whole moving on to the next thing, moving on to the next thing. And there can be a real lack of celebration. But you're right. If you've got a team that's worked really hard and you're just on to the next thing, don't even celebrate any of what they've done, that wouldn't be very motivating for an employee.
Absolutely. And like anything, there are always going to be peaks and troughs. We're going to have these peak periods in business where everybody is working hard and fast, but there has to be the trough that follows it. And even if it's like a small little trough or a small little pause, everybody else needs to recuperate before they get on to the next big thing. Often in businesses, like online businesses, for example, where they live launch, if you jam in too many live launches, the team just get burnt out and exhausted because they're never getting their weekends back. They're never like dropping back down from their 50-hour week or whatever it is, because you've got a new idea, new product, new idea, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the awareness around that, or if that's the way you want your business to be, then it's like we almost have to have teams on shifts, because that team needs to flex down and this team can flex up if you want to launch that often or if you want to have that many ideas in ideation or implementation stage.
Yeah, and then I suppose that's why people end up with staff, isn't it? Because they're not good at everything, which most people aren't. And then if you've got multiple ideas happening across multiple projects, you then can't do that all yourself.
That's right. And I think that takes it's a real discipline and a peeling back of the layers to look in the mirror or look at a piece of paper and actually think, well, if I've decided or if I accept that I'm not going to work on everything, then what will I work on? Where will I put my skills? What will I decide I'm going to spend my time on? And what am I going to let someone else do? And then how am I going to let that be okay, that that person may not be doing it perfectly, they may not be doing it to the extent that I wanted, it may not be the 100% amazing if Jane did it version, but it's still enough. It'll still move us forward. And I think that's actually, that's quite challenging for everybody. So what are the things in my business that only I can do and I can't teach someone to do it as well as I can, or I don't want to teach somebody, or I just love it? And they're the things we hold on to. Whereas the things that irritate us, we can do with our eyes closed, that we've done so many times, we could probably just record a Loom video and someone else can pick it up pretty quick. Or the things that we know other people have the skills to do it to a sufficient level, not 100%, not perfect, but sufficient. They're the things we need to hand over if we want to grow beyond our capacity. And ultimately, that's also a choice. Like, you can stay doing all the things and you'll just be limited by the number of hours you've got in a week to allocate to work.
Yeah, or you do too many hours, you can't sustain, you lack consistency, and then you burn out it dies, you get another idea, and then you're on the, I do see a lot of ADHD people on the cycle of ideas, but they either don't initiate them or they can't be consistent. And I've done that in the past as well. And then, yeah, you end up just not being able to succeed. So I was talking to you about whether you'd worked with ADHD people before, because you seem to handle me quite well, Paula, and all of my chaos. Do you work with a lot of ADHD people? I would assume you do, because they would be in their own business. Is that correct?
I'd say 50% of my clients have ADHD, either self-diagnosed or diagnosed, and I'd say 50% don't. I think that there are a lot of entrepreneurs now identifying as ADHD or diagnosed, and I think there are a lot more of them in the startup space, in the newer space, and I think there are less of them in established businesses. So, for example, if I think to a business group that I was in last year, 5 out of the 7 people were going through the process of having a diagnosis, being diagnosed or self-diagnosing themselves.
Wow.
And they were creatives, and they were sort of in probably like the first 5 years of business.
Yeah.
They're also really creative, and they're really fast-paced, and they're highly capable. So they're just like, well, why not just make this money for myself and go as fast as I can?
What would be a main difference that you would see working with a neurodivergent person or working with a neurotypical person?
I identify as neurotypical. I am super organized. I find it easy to prioritize. I'm super structured. I'm pretty good with boundaries. But, you know, I'm definitely not perfect Polly over here, because bordering on the edge of burnout, and spent the weekend away from my family and children to make sure that I don't sort of tip over to the edge. So I guess overworking, it's really common across like lots of entrepreneurs. I'm probably not that fast paced, for example. I don't think I move through things really fast. My brain drops right down into the detail and gets stuck there. So actually I need to surround myself with people who can make implementation seem really easy. Whereas potentially, if we're generalizing, I've got a great friend who is an amazing entrepreneur and runs an online business. She'll get an idea for a new online product. She'll build the product, record the videos, write the sales page, push it to market, run some Facebook ads, and wake up with sales in a 24-hour period.
So is she neurotypical?
No, no, no.
I was like, that's crazy.
Absolutely. She's definitely diagnosed as ADHD. And she's amazing. And I just look at that and just go, that'd take me a year.
I wonder what her recovery period on that would be though.
Well, I think it's how much back-to-back she does of that. So I think she's learning to give herself some downtime.
I wonder if it takes a similar amount of time when you look at a recovery period for one project. Is it just a neurotypical person does it a chip, like all over a week, and the other person goes 24 hours straight and then sleeps?
I think because I've been in business for myself for 14 years and I've started 3 businesses in that period. And the first business, I think I made all the mistakes under the sun, and I literally woke up 4 years in and just hated what I'd built and hated the model, the structure, the way I was working, all the things. And it took a long time to unwind from that. And I guess that sort of, I wouldn't call that burnout. That was just mistake land. And so I think I carry that forward now with me, with everything I do, and that really makes me slow down. And it's almost like the fear of ending up there again means I'm going slow.
But, you know, I always find your work-life balance to be quite inspiring, because I have no idea what to do with mine. Mm-hmm. I think your communication around work-life balance and what is an emergency. When we first talked about that, that blew my mind. I said, oh, I went away for a weekend and I was really upset because I told everybody to only call me for an emergency, and I'd only been gone away an hour and I got like 3 phone calls. And then you were like, what was in the phone call? And it turned out I hadn't defined to anybody what an emergency was. So they all thought it was an emergency and I thought it was just nothing because I'd never defined it.
And I think that's just the way my brain works, is it's highly practical and it drops to detail. What do you think they mean by urgent? Let's specify that. Let's put it out there. And I think same with boundaries, definitely not perfect, but I've set them. And I've set them based on the way I want to live my life. And that is in a way where I don't end up burnt out and I get to spend time with my kids and all the things. I've got my boundaries, but I've also got my little rules to give me indications. When will I know if I'm in balance or if I'm out of balance? So one of the other things is when my kids come flying in the door, literally I can hear them, like, you know, doing the lean around the corner when they get home, flying in. If they arrive at my desk at 3:15 after school and I want them to go away because I haven't finished my work, that's telling me something. It's just a trigger. It's just an alert. Ah, something's out of whack this week that you feel like you need another hour or whatever. Knowing that in a perfect world where I didn't have children, I'd probably just sit there at my desk and work all night. But actually, it's more like, what have I said yes to this week that's led me to needing this extra hour when I had decided that for me, work-life balance looked like being ready by 3 o'clock most days for when they come in to have a chat.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I've been thinking about this for a while, Paula. When we started to define work-life balance nearly 6 years ago, I remember you said to me around what defines it, what do you want? I remember not having any words, which is rare. Like I had no idea because no one had ever asked me, I never thought of it. And it has become clear to me only in the last 3 months working with you again that I think it's because I have had the mindset, well, when everyone's finished with me, when I've done all of the things that I need to do for everybody else, then I'll just like know that that's my free time. But setting it up that way means you never have any of that because you're a mom and it never ends, or you're in your own business and it never ends. And it never occurred to me to have a boundary and hold by what that boundary was. Like I never defined it. But when you said about if it's 3:15 and your kid's standing next to you and you're like, can you please go away? That is such a vivid thing for me. I'm like, that would actually, that's a really strong boundary that I wouldn't have thought to define.
Mm. And that's the thing. It's kind of like, I sort of set that out as my benchmark or my ideal. And then I went through the practicalities of that. And it wasn't practical for the amount of work I wanted to do, the amount of clients I wanted to have.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think there'd be a lot of people that would be listening that would be more of the ADHD mum, like I want to work from home, create a small income. Maybe they want to do a large income, who knows. Yeah. But a lot of the mums that I see posting or I talk to will probably most commonly say, I want to make like a full-time salary, working part-time from home and be able to be there with my kids from 3 o'clock, drop them off. And that's kind of like what I'm looking for is generally what I see. And I mean, that sounds like the dream, doesn't it? But I wonder if they end up working at night because we never define, which is what I've found for myself, I've never defined what that actually success looks like. Mm-hmm. You just go, well, I'm just going to make the full-time money and then you end up working all night.
Absolutely. And if you like working at night, if that's when your creative juices are going or you love the quiet of the night when the kids are asleep, then do that. That's great. But if you're like me and your brain doesn't work very well at night because you're tired and I'd actually rather be on the couch and everything I do is going to take longer anyway, then make a plan so that that's the way you work. It's just making sure that you're working on the things that are actually important, because we often fill our lists with a whole bunch of things which are busy tasks that might make us feel good and give us a little bit of a like a ticket off the list or a dopamine hit, but actually are they the moving the stuff forward tasks? So I think the ability to actually prioritize what's actually important is part of it too.
Yeah, that's a great point. Often ADHD people are so successful that they start as a sole trader, then they need help because they have gaps in their skill set. What do you see as challenges from the people you've worked with?
One of the gaps or the challenges is finishing things. So typically I see a lot of entrepreneurs, and definitely ADHD entrepreneurs, need finishers. So they need people who will take their idea and take it past 60 or 70% when they've moved on to another idea. So definitely a finisher. Somebody with attention to detail. Again, someone who will drop in, review it, and make sure it's to the ideal quality, potentially because you've moved on to another idea or because you're moving so fast. And I think that somebody who can support you with the systemization or the structures, if that's not your preference or you don't want to slow down enough to look at it. And that's definitely a little bit of a point of resistance for a lot of business owners. And I think it's something that if you have ADHD, you need to be really aware of. Like, I'm a fast mover. I don't want to have to slow down. But if you think these things are important because you want to scale, then potentially plugging in someone to help you with that. So one of my clients, for example, last week we interviewed like a project systems ops kind of person to come and work with her in her business. This person's super structured. She's very project management minded, very prioritization and deadline-y. I loved her. I thought she was great. After the interview together, I said to my client, this is the yin to your yang, and this is 100% what your business needs to get to the next stage. Are you ready? Because this person's going to annoy you. They're going to push back on you in all the right ways. But when you have an idea, we've just said to them, their job is to say, where does that idea sit in our priorities? Where does that idea sit in this? What are we deprioritizing to prioritize that, et cetera, et cetera? All really great questions, but this is a choice. Do you want to? Are you ready?
Wow. And what did they say? I kind of want to know.
They said, yes, 100%. She was like, absolutely, let's go. Let's go. She was excited because she was very self-aware. Like she was such a fast mover, such an ideas person, and has that massive vision for the business to grow and know she needs that person. But it's just that awareness that, you know, you're hiring someone who's really different to you.
I'm kind of realizing that we're talking a lot about the hyperactive ADHD type, that like real cognitive hyperactive, they've got lots of energy, they're ready to go. Mm. I'm wondering if you see many inattentive ADHDers.
Probably not, no.
I don't think you would.
No, I'd say not. Tell me more about the inattentive ones.
I would imagine if there was an inattentive ADHDer, they would probably be the type that would turn up to your meeting. Like, you know how you usually set tasks, you make a plan, everyone knows what's going on. I would imagine an inattentive ADHDer would turn up having forgot about the list, didn't do the list, got very busy, and then didn't quite start anything, but did some other things that were unrelated, and then came up with a lot of reasons why, but may not actually do the task.
I think probably I've had one or two of them who would turn up and say, what are we talking about today? Where are we at?
Yes, that's them, Paula.
I guess to a certain extent, I hold it as my responsibility to sort of run with that and guide them, but I get expensive pretty fast. If you're not taking action in between, then it's just a conversation, which is really expensive.
Yeah, it's tough because I think with the inattentive ADHDs, they really want to change, because my husband is an inattentive ADHDer and it's great for me to live with him to get a real insight into how hard it is. Mm. In some ways, I reckon it's harder because they want all the same things as everybody else, but their ADHD turns up or shows up so differently. I think it's harder in some ways. It's much harder for my husband to do one job than it is for me, just with the way his brain works. It's not a gender thing, but his brain, and for him to get a task started, is really hard. And he has owned his own business, but you're right, it's difficult for him to scale because the amount of tasks that you have to do. And to have staff is a luxury, because in your own business, you need money, you need income to pay people. So how do you get to that point? Because I think that is almost harder for an inattentive ADHD. When you're hyperactive, you can push through.
Yeah, I think getting somebody to help you get started. So in my case, that'd be when we'd share a screen, we'd start writing out a job ad together, we start writing something, we get really specific, like, go and have this conversation, here's this document, this is what you just need to do, et cetera, et cetera, and get them going. Because I think often it's almost that activation energy, isn't it, that's required to get it off the ground.
Well, you're actually kind of body doubling, to be honest. That's a great way, because inattentive ADHD has kind of got to break down all the tasks, which can be overwhelming, and then maybe get started with them. So you've done that before with me, where you open up the Google document, what are we looking for? And I think I said to you, I just had to up my ADHD medication and drink a lot of coffee and just hate every moment where I had to write down all the processes for social media. It was, I reckon, the most painful thing I've done this year. It was so hard. But you'd opened it up, started it, and I was like, okay, I just got to finish. Whereas I think you're right, if it's just on the list as something you've got to do, you're like, I don't know where to start with that. It's easy to just move on.
Absolutely. Just what's the easiest next step to take going forward? Because if you really want something, you have to take a step forward. And if you can't take that step forward, then you need to bring someone else in to do it, to get it started for you. So it's either working outside of what feels comfortable, getting going, or paying someone else to do it.
I feel like so much of this can be transformed into personal life.
Mm, 100%.
It so can. I hired the cleaner because we moved house. It was the same cleaner that's been here. So I went through this whole document with her, like, what would be success for me? And it was like, you letting yourself in, you not interrupting me, or if you're not feeling comfortable with that, we could have a brief meeting for 10 minutes. It was so specific. I felt like an idiot, which I reckon was the most embarrassing thing of my life, because I usually pretend not to care, and you know how I don't communicate properly, and then I become upset when it doesn't happen the way I want it to happen.
I want to offer that you're not being an idiot and it's not embarrassing, because actually the flip side of that is you're giving her the best chance to be awesome and to do exactly what you wanted, because what you're actually doing is being unbelievably clear, and you're uncomfortable doing something because it's not in your style or what you're used to doing, but it actually isn't. That doesn't make it not the best thing for them.
That's true. That is true. And she did do a great job and she did seem very happy. So she probably wasn't weirded out. And it was probably the best cleaner I've ever had by getting clear.
And you really benefit from taking the time to think in advance and to write things out and to not rely on your memory in the spot to say them all verbally, in the same way you would do that in an interview. You'd write out your questions, you'd think about what it's important, what you want to ask, et cetera, et cetera. That's actually basically the same thing I did when we hired a nanny. I was like, you know, I'm working from home. That's what this means. You can't come and knock on my door. Don't let them eat this food, blah, blah, blah. Because it's like, otherwise, are we going to spend, you know, 12 months working together until you work all this stuff out yourself? Or could we just shortcut it? And how many awkward conversations are we going to have between now and then to get you to the point where you actually know all the things that I don't want you to let him do? So let's just make that better for everyone and be like, hey, I've got a list.
Do you think that time passes? Like, let's just say I have the cleaner, I never communicate, or you get the nanny, you don't really communicate up front. And then they're doing all these things that you don't want them to do, that you should have told them up front. How do you think you have that conversation?
Well, that's the thing. It's often really tricky, and most people avoid it. Most people will go and talk to everybody else about it, but not the person. But if we come back to your workplace in your team, then that's when you need to sit down and go, okay, well, I really need you doing this, but at the moment you're doing this like this, and here's the gap. And most people call them, you know, you might have heard the term constructive criticism or difficult conversations, or, but actually they are, because you need to learn how to deliver that conversation in a way that's clear and motivating and not upsetting. But you can avoid all of that by being so clear up front.
Yeah. And I think I've been caught in that awkward conversation for so long that that's what pushed me to have the conversation up front. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think you showed me the skills, yes, but then it was really the fear of having to do it anyway in slower steps, drip by drip, over a long period with, let's say, the cleaner, for example, where if I don't tell her, she's going to continue to do these things, which is, I just had a cleaner for 2 years that I didn't brief, and then it felt too late. And then it just, yeah, it was difficult, and I chose not to have the conversation because I was wanting to avoid it more than I was unhappy. But this time I was like, right, I am good to go. I know what to say. I've got the skills, and I know what will happen if I don't.
Absolutely. You're going to have to talk about it at some stage. So most things, somebody isn't going to work out through osmosis. So if you look at it from that perspective and go, I'm actually helping them avoid the difficult conversation or the awkward conversation down the track, and I'm helping me, let's just be clear.
Yeah, it's great, because from the employee's point of view, you wouldn't want to be flying blind trying to figure out what they liked.
That's right. That's right. And most people will come and work for you who want to do a really great job. Like, I don't believe that most people lie in the interview and try to trick you into hiring them if they're not right. Like, I just don't think most people do that. So if we also think, well, they want to do the right thing, they want to please me, they want to perform in a great way or be a high performer, so how can I help them do that? I've got to spell it out. I've got to spell out the things that are important, and also tell them the things that I don't care if you vary. Like, you know, if you just, and that might be social media, it might be responding to emails. Just as long as you respond within 24 hours and don't swear, great. Okay, cool. If you don't care about the detail, then let them know where they've got free rein as well.
I think it really goes over into personal stuff too, because it must, I don't know if it's a neurodivergent thing where I just feel like the details around how I want things done, like hubby, kids, all of it, seems to be like I think they're going to mind read or something, and then I just end up getting confused as to how did you not know that you had to get that done today because, you know, that child needs that particular food. How did you not know that? But have I spelt that out? Unsure.
Absolutely. So get really clear on what you want to do, what your business needs you to do, whether you're going to do it or whether you get somebody else to do it. And if you're bringing in someone else to do it, then get really, really clear on what success looks like and what parts you're obsessed about they do in a certain way and what parts you don't care, and hire That's that true. Person.
Sounds so easy when you say it. I love it. Okay, final question, Paula. What do you think works well for ADHD people who struggle hiring staff?
Getting trusted guidance, having somebody to bounce it off. I think knowing your blind spots, knowing that you're likely to rush into it, you're likely to hire off instinct. If you haven't got the clarity that you need, or if that clarity doesn't feel obvious to you, get somebody to help you get it so that you can actually go into it in an objective way, almost with a checklist. Okay, you know, Paula says, I can't hire somebody unless they prove to me that they can do this, 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 and this, and they want to do it like this. So because you've got to work out how to be objective, because most people hire staff from an emotive place. And if you're fast-paced and you're wanting to make a quick decision, it'll be a highly charged emotional decision probably. And if you don't have the clarity of the hard skills that you're looking for or the specifics, then you'll just hire based on a feeling and you'll be facing awkward conversations. So get the guidance to help you get the clarity you need to do it once well. So, you know, hiring for yourself as an entrepreneur is typically really emotional. You don't have much money. You've got a small budget. You've got all the ideas in the world. You've got to work out actually what is the most helpful person to add in here to put my money towards, because you don't have much. And then you've got to make that decision in the best possible way. And you need absolute clarity. So what do you need the person to do specifically? How do you want them to do it in a way that's not going to annoy you? What parts do you care deeply about? What parts do you not really care too much about? And then from a practical perspective, how are we going to find this person? And what are you going to ask them in an interview to make sure that they can actually do the things?
Yeah, perfect. Okay, I reckon we are nearly ready to finish up. Is there anything you want to add before we finish?
No, I think that probably my overarching message is learning to harness ADHD by learning to communicate well, learning to delegate well, and surrounding yourself with the right people can be really exciting.
Yeah, and there's a lot of energy that you can harness.
Totally.
In a positive way, possibly. You can, I suppose, hone it in the right direction instead of spreading it across a lot of areas that you're not good at. That's a great point. Thank you so much for your time, Paula. If you don't know who Paula is or you'd like to find out more, I'm going to leave all of her information in the show notes. And thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums Podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.